No pollinators. No pollinators, no fruit. This is a very appropriate time of year to be considering pollinators and fruit as we see the results of our sowing and our tending and the important work of the pollinators in all of the wonderful gardens all over town. All that beauty makes me draw in my breath in wonder every day as I take my morning walks and ride my bicycle to work. One of the things I've really appreciated about our move to Madison is that I'm once again able to be very close to direct evidence of the cycles of the natural world. And so now, as we enter into the season marked by Mabon, I can see the sunflowers hanging their bright yellow heads because they're so heavy with seeds, and the squirrels gathering their nuts, and the orange pumpkins under those huge green leaves. The themes of Mabon are balance and harvest. Balance because it's an equinox. Day and night are of equal length tomorrow. Even though the days have been very gradually getting shorter since the summer solstice, starting tomorrow, the nights will be longer than the days. So we're entering into the dark part of the year, the part where we begin to appreciate Mabon's other theme. It's the second harvest festival of the pagan wheel of the year. Not the third, as I wrote in the newsletter, but the second. The harvest season is halfway over. In the two gardens I've tended this growing season, the one at my old home in Indiana and the one that my landlady graciously left for me here, our first harvest was full of garlic and asparagus and rhubarb and strawberries and lettuce and Brussels sprouts. We're nearing the end of our run for tomatoes, cucumbers, basil, peppers, cabbages, beans, and all that zucchini. We're looking forward to harvesting our fall squashes and our pumpkins, our apples, our coal crops. We're done with our canning, and we've put up stores for the winter ahead. People in ancient cultures who marked the turns of the wheel were far more dependent on, and in many cases more aware of, the cycle of the seasons than we sometimes are today. A poor harvest then led to sickness and starvation during the winter months. As a culture now, although most certainly not all individuals in our community can claim this privilege, but as a culture, we no longer think of the harvest literally. We, and again we defining, we communally, we have resources that allow us to not have to harvest our own food, although many of us love to do this. And so we have the luxury of knowing that we'll probably survive through the winter, all things going well. And the issues we face as we pass this point of balance between light and dark are likely to be more spiritual and philosophical than physical. We look for ways to survive emotionally. We appreciate grasshopper. And our harvest is symbolic. In his book of daily meditations called Earthbound, Brian Nelson writes these words for tomorrow's date. One task of the autumn equinox is reckoning. How do our stores stand as we face the winter? Are we prepared for the weather to come? Summer has been a time of ease, of lazing in the heat, but now we must plan for shorter and colder days ahead. It's tempting, he writes, to romanticize nature, but the world doesn't automatically provide us with everything we need. It takes planning, the endless nurturing of seeds and dreams, and the hard work of a timely harvest to help us through the winter. Harvest, he says, is an opportunity to practice mindfulness. Whether we chop wood and carry water, or whether we reap the investments we've placed into careers or families, the growing chill in the autumn air reconnects us to the now and prepares us for the season ahead. We reap and we sow in different ways. Hard-working Aunt shared all the food she had collected during the summer with her cohort. Grasshopper shared his music and made the winter seem to pass more quickly. Both are sustenance. Both are important. And they kind of complement each other, creating a kind of balance between the gifts and needs of these different characters in our story and in our own lives. But that's not always how it works. And here's where I get preachy. Some of the things happening in our environmental and our economic spheres are signs of harvesting going out of balance, of reaping what we haven't sown, or of reaping out of proportion. The growing disparity between the rich and the poor, the shrinking middle ground between them. Disproportionately high rates of incarceration for men of color. A marked decline in civility in public discourse around these and other issues, and environmental issues. Shortages of crucial resources like clean water and good topsoil, increased occurrences of severe weather and extreme wildfires, rising sea levels, toxic substances released into air, water, soil. All of these issues intersect, affecting each other and building on each other. For example, many people are just beginning to consider that as we humans continue to support practices that damage our earth, we're also doing damage to each other. People who live just 10 minutes from my sister's house on Long Island became homeless after Superstorm Sandy. It was a half hour from where I grew up. There are people who are renting from landlords who can't afford to make their homes habitable, or people who are underinsured, don't have the resources to supplement the small payments that they've received. People living in hotels and neighbors' spare rooms and cars because these are the cheapest or the safest or the only options. People were impacted by this storm that was likely stronger than most others in history because of the ability of humans to affect our entire interconnected system, just as they've been impacted by other increasingly intense weather events. There's also the impacts of environmental pollution. When I first hear about oil spills, I think of those pictures on TV of the oil-covered docks. But oil-covered wetlands and water creatures also mean loss of livelihood for people who make their living from waters, and loss of buffer zones for people who live near waters. Toxic industrial pollutants released into the air means higher asthma rates for children whose families can't afford to move away. The things I'm talking about here fall into the realm of what's called environmental justice, which is one of the names for the intersection of issues around race and poverty and the environment. The good folks who are right now, right this very minute, participating in the People's Climate March in New York City are trying to raise awareness around this intersection. They picked the time and the place because this is when and where the UN Climate Summit meets. The organizers of the march say this about it: with our future on the line and the whole world watching, we'll take a stand to bend the course of history. We'll take to the streets to demand the world we know is in our reach, a world with an economy that works for people and the planet, a world safe from the ravages of climate change, a world with good jobs, clean air, and water, and healthy communities. When I asked Beth Esser, one of this congregation's members who was able to go to the march, what she'd say to us this morning if she were here, she reminded me of the slogan of the march: to transform the image of the climate movement from one dominated by Prius-driving white liberals to one populated by the entire spectrum of race and class in America, and one that cares as much about fixing economic equality as about going solar. I'm proud to say that Unitarian Universalism and we, in ways, are poised to be a big part of this transformation. There are a huge number of HUUs at the march this weekend demonstrating in their yellow shirts, because this is another way to stand on the side of love. They're also joining with groups from other denominations to form larger faith-based groups in the understanding that there's a theological basis for taking care of everyone in the human family as we take care of the rest of the interconnected web. Whether you believe that Earth stewardship was part of the God-driven deal of the gift of dominion over the earth, or that the holy is to be found in everything around us and should be treated as such, or that it's our responsibility to care for that which provides us such abundant harvest, it's a fact that humans, are the only beings on our living planet with the power to break it or to fix it. And to fix it. And with that, I'm back to the themes of Mabon. I invite you on this day that the climate change activists from across the country are making a huge statement about bringing our human race back into balance, to do the same for yourself. Take a little time today to think about the harvests you've been blessed to receive. And then take a little time to think about what action you might take to move toward better balance in our community and our world. Action can take many forms. It can take just this thinking, just this discerning where we are. It can mean reassessing some of our personal habits and changing them a little bit here and there to decrease our individual impacts on our surroundings and our neighbors. It can mean taking part in demonstrations and lobbying our politicians to let them know how important we know that it is to end some of our culture's large-scale destructive practices. It can mean boycotting particular products whose manufacturers continue to use unsustainable growth and production methods. Many of these things are ways to help contribute to what some are calling a sea change in how we think about our place in this great interconnected web. May it be so. May we be so.